Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man.
You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the measuring stick. Let's go, hook him up!
I want to dog you until I wear your Texas ass off.
And hell, I might even get on top of my wife tonight.
Welcome to another edition of Over the Top Radio. I'm your host, Ed, in San Antonio, and I'm joined by my co-host, Katrina. What's going on, Katrina?
I don't know. What's going on?
I have no idea. I'm still waiting for my computer to load the studio, and
okay,
I'm having no luck.
Can you PM Craig on Facebook or something? Tell him to call back in.
Okay, Let me do that.
He was on there and with nobody on the switchboard or called in or anything, so he hung up.
Matt Clary, text Craig because I'm having all kinds of computer issues. Let me text this. Sorry, let's see. I have everything on my computer stuck in today.
So what's been going on?
Late.
So we couldn't get logged onto the switchboard or anything, and I called in the number and told me it was disconnected or something like that. And so I just typed the number in manually like I'm some kind of Neanderthal. So.
They probably said,
fuck these guys. He ain't calling back in. He don't care.
Yeah. Well, I just told Matt Clary to message Craig and tell him. He said he already did, so hopefully he'll call back. It's not his fault. He's the one who had to move the show anyway.
I was so mad because I was early this morning. I was putting the show together and setting it up, and I was doing the description. I had everything set, you know, times and everything, and hit submit, and there was a problem with the website. Said, "Oh fuck!" And I'm on my Xbox, so I can't like copy and paste stuff.
So you had to keep redoing it.
Yeah. And then the second time, I just put join Ed, Craig, and Katrair as we talk about Mick Foley, just like one sentence, in case it fucked up again. So, because it was either that or gonna have to use my phone or something like that. But
yeah.
Cool.
Well, my studio actually, I thought it loaded because it was it stopped spinning, but apparently I got some kind of error. Until Craig finally decided to call back in, we go ahead and just start on our topic here. We're going to discuss the career of Mick Foley since he was the latest induction into the WWE Hall of Fame. And we know a lot about Foley. I mean, I guess my first exposure to Foley would have been in the Superclass match where he came with the Rock and Roll RPMs against the Guerreros. That's the first time I ever saw him. But I guess, do you have a timeline? We go ahead and start from the beginning.
I first saw him, it was in that, I think it was when those AWA was doing that stuff with Memphis and World Class. Because they do much like some ESPN tapings, and they had like all three of the groups working together, I think.
Yeah.
And I think he was in Memphis at the time. He was a member of the Stud Stable with Robert Fuller and Jimmy Golden, and he was tag teaming with Gary Young. And that's probably the first match I saw him in. Also, it was that Super Clash match, and I think it was like right after that he went to World Class and managed by Akbar, which he was there for a while, and hold on just a second.
We're having more technical difficulties now?
Craig, you may speak now.
Hello.
This is all your fault, Craig.
How is this my fault?
It's not
true. We do this for you.
No, the I'm sure the website will be working perfectly fine at 8 o'clock, but now it's 6 o'clock and there's some kind of solar eclipse going on or something that's screwing up all the Blog Talk Radio. That kept us from logging on for the longest time. So it's all your fault,
okay.
Just admit it.
You decided to go on the air and bury me and talk crap. And I was just trying to call
you. What are you talking about?
Uh-huh.
You're listening to Matt Clary? Matt Clary doesn't know what he's talking about. No one's buried you at all.
Okay.
I'm burying you right now while you're on the air. Why would I do it when you're not in the air? It's not as fun to bury you when you're not here.
How
dare you not wait 10 minutes on hold to see if somebody shows up?
I got nothing else to do tonight.
Well, you're just going to go see Trent, so it's not like you really have anything to do.
Nothing going on.
And for all this trouble that you caused, I hope he doesn't sing Purple Rain.
I'm going to make a big sign and say Purple Rain or Riot.
Did I ever tell you about the time my mom took away my Purple Rain soundtrack and threw it away?
Why?
She called me listening to Darling Nikki.
Yep, I was just going to say. Darling Nikki's on that, and it was on the,
She was curious. She threw it away and never got it back.
Well, you should have.
Like a friend of mine's dad caught him listening to Two Live Crew, and they were like, really, really bad. And he took a Two Live Crew tape and smashed it with a hammer out in the garage.
I don't know that we're actually on the air, man. Apparently, our feed has died.
Well, it's still recording, so it's fine. They can listen to it on the download. I'm sure it's still recording, even if we're not broadcasting.
I blame this cat in Boston. It's got to be him.
Right? I wonder if Block Talk Radio is located in Boston. Everyone's stuck at home right now.
Oh, man.
Did you hear that abortion that was at Brian and Vinny show last night at the end?
I stayed with it as long as I could stomach it.
Yeah. What's going on in Boston?
Are you being serious right now?
Yeah, I don't pay attention to the news.
They're hot on the trail.
Do you know that they blew up the marathon a couple of days ago?
Yeah, I knew about that. I thought this was something.
Okay, well, last night the two guys who did it kind of went. They went and robbed the convenience store. They killed MIT college police officer and carjacked somebody and stole their car. And then the cops caught up to them, had a big shootout, and one of them apparently had like a strap-on bomb or something, and he ran through the police to blow him up, but apparently he only like, it wasn't that big of an explosion, just enough to kill him. And so one's dead, and the other one's still at large, I'm guessing.
Dude don't believe in laying low after the big crime, does he?
I guess not. Well, they were walking around like right before the explosion, like nothing. So their pictures were all over the place. So I think it's funny though because Twitter had everything like an hour before CNN and Fox News and everything else. So it's like. Twitter actually was doing something good for a while before it changed last night. But it was a great night.
World's a seeding off of feeding off of Brian and Vince's show last night. They actually have a area pinned down that says there's shots fired in Waterton, Mass., and it's actually going on right now. So they probably have a good bead on the guy. So probably have some news here in the next hour or so, oddly and crazy enough.
Yeah. Were these the white guys or like kind of ethnic types or anything like that?
No, they're from Chechnya, which basically means they're Russian Muslims. They're double trouble.
Yep.
Yeah, it wasn't like someone from Syria or Iraq.
We need problems with other countries now too. So whatever.
Yeah. Well, the Chechens have always been kind of crazy. There was an incident with them before. Hopefully this is just an isolated thing, just two crazy dudes and not some kind of like Chechen invasion. And it's like instead of Red Dawn, where it's the Cubans or the Koreans, it'll be the freaking Chechens that are going to invade America and take over.
Jim Coulter's
the best, part of the Brian Avini show is like they're... Brian wants to follow it kind of like live on the show, so he decides maybe, but they're getting like, you know, secondhand information. So he posts on Twitter for someone who's listening to a police scanner to call in and give them updates. So they first call,
yeah.
the guy starts asking about extreme rules. So they say, hey, you know, we're not taking like this car right now, so they hang up on him. So they post again, and then the phone rings, he picks it up, it's the same dude, why don't you talk about extreme rules?
Yeah.
So they hang up on him again.
Are you going to accept the challenge or something?
Something like that. And then, like, they post again, only call in if you have news on the bombers or whatever. And they call, you get a call, so he takes the call, and the guy's like, so is Zach Swagger like a pothead or something?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh,
well, that's what you get. That's what you get. So, whatever. Here's your news update this week.
I'm getting breaking news update right now from Matt Clary. They're saying a boat is surrounded and the police are putting plenty of holes in it.
Yeah.
Okay. So
yeah,
hopefully
I'm watching the live coverage here. It's a crazy scene. Anyway.
Well, hopefully they kill some bitch. It's been a crazy week. I mean, besides, you know, the bombing and all this, and then freaking the city of Waco almost got blown up a map here in Texas. It's a crazy ass week, man.
Yeah, this week's pretty much sucked. Actually, there's a lady that was at the Boston City Marathon. She ran in the marathon. And
it was the guy. The husband is the one that was in the marathon.
And then flew home to Waco, Texas, so actually saw both bombings.
Yeah. That's crazy. I posted the link on my Facebook of it's just some couple in a pickup truck, like kind of far from the fire, and they're just like filming it. And then that sucker goes, and it's just amazing how loud and how fast that shit got to her. You know, of course, it knocked the phone out of her hand and stuff, and then you just hear her screaming that she can't hear anything. But I mean, yeah, that was like a nuclear explosion that went off in Waco.
Anyway, since we're completely off topic and possibly nobody's listening to us, maybe we should get back on topic.
Well, we were trying to do that, but you called in late.
If I could reach through a phone and choke a person.
Why would you want to do that to Couture? He's trying to do the best job he can. Please.
He ain't talking to me.
No.
I know he ain't talking to me. It's Craig's a man of God and a man of peace, and he would never choke somebody like that.
Yeah. God is a vengeful God, though, and anyway.
Okay. Well, we were talking about the first time we actually personally saw Mick Foley. What was the first time you actually saw Mick Foley for the first time, Craig?
I would venture to say it was on, it was in the match with Mil Mascaras. That was probably the first time.
No, that was the
Clash
of
the NWA one, the Clash of the Champions.
Yeah, Clash of the Champions.
And he took the flat back bump off the apron to the floor, and and possibly spit out a tooth, but probably not.
You know, regarding this match, you know, we've all heard Foley's side of this story of this match where he bitches about Mil Moscatus and this and that, but at this point in his career, who the fuck is Mick Foley to question Mil Moscatus? I mean, it'd be one thing for him to do it right now, Hall of Famer, all his long career, but at the time, and when he's first starting a little celebrity, who the fuck is he to say something bad about Mil Moscatus? Now, granted, Mil Moscatus might be a jerk and all, but at the time, we're talking about one of the most famous wrestlers in the world, one of the longest careers in the world. I mean,
well, he didn't say it at the
time.
He said it when the stories came out later, like when he wrote his book.
Yeah, but you know, I guess that is a few years later, but still, I mean, it's like, at the time, he should just be happy he's working with Mil Moscatus.
Well, he is allowed to get mad if he wants to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He's as right as an American. You don't need this beaner coming over and fucking shit up.
That beaner drew more money than Mick Foley has. And I know people will probably scoff at that idea, but it's true. But anyway, the oldest match, the oldest match that I've seen of Mick Foley, which by far wasn't the first time I've seen him. Or you know what? Maybe I did see it. Maybe you saw it too, Couture, but it was just so long ago and. That's, you know, and didn't register at the time, but...
Cactus Jack doesn't have the best win-loss record in the NWA. You know why I think that is, Jim? He's just like a guy like Dr. Death. He needs guidance. He has all the skills and all the ability. Cactus Jack just needs somebody to tell him which direction to go in. Right now, Mascara's out on the floor. Hey, Cactus Jack could be setting him up for that big elbow. We've seen him do it before. The elbow right off the apron of the ring. He's setting him up for it, but Mascara's doesn't look stunned. Wait, Mascara's getting back in the ring. Cactus Jack doesn't know he's there. What in the world?
Oh, God, right on the concrete.
Oh, no.
Right on the back of his head on the concrete.
No. Cactus Jack is dead. He's done it this time. I've never seen anything like that.
His head just smacked that concrete. He was away from the mat. That's a concrete floor fan.
He went 10 feet out onto the concrete. No human being could get back up after that. But he's doing it.
There was no mat there. He fell right on the back of his head on the concrete.
Still one of my favorite calls of all time.
Well, when he drives around and he kind of forgets where he lives and stuff like that, he can kind of blame himself for doing stuff like that. I mean, but I mean that was a great sell job by Jim Cornette and Jim Ross. That was fucking awesome. But what I was saying is like the oldest match that I've ever seen of his would be the tag match where I guess he was teaming with Les Jordan. And
It was the first ever episode of Superstars of Wrestling, WWF, when they left like the little place they used to do the TV tapings and then started going to the big arenas every week.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah. And I just remember watching a match in the Foley DVD, the Bulldogs, who are known to be bullies and pranksters, and everyone knows Dynamite Kid is like the most, just biggest asshole whoever put on a pair of trunks and boots. And they're in this match. I think what happened was I think Foley asked if he could get a spot in or do something, and that was a big mistake for having nobody like him, jobber, ask that as a fucking Dynamite Kid. And basically, they beat the living shit out of him. It looked like they almost like broke his jaw. I mean, they really kicked the living shit out of him. And then they're working all easy with Les Thornton, which is even funnier. But
I watched I watched a documentary last night. It's a documentary that just came out this week. It was on Xbox, and I watched it last night. He said he couldn't, like, eat solid food for, I don't know, like a week or a month or something.
I couldn't doubt
and
it.
And if anybody's ever had, I mean, I've actually suffered a broken jaw and wasn't able to eat for, like, 2 months. So that's not pleasant.
Oh, yeah. And I don't even remember which one did it. Was it Davey Boy or Dynamite? But one of them did
that
Dynamite. Game of Smoke. Like,
they showed the spot where he used to do that, like that. It was like that big running clothesline type thing where he'd like his. I don't know. It was just like his bicep would like hit you right in the face. And
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just
so. Yeah, it's almost. I mean, it's not funny that he got taken advantage of, but I mean, they beat his ass so bad, it is kind of funny in some ways. But yeah, that's the oldest match that I've seen of Foley, and at that point, he wasn't really overweight, but I guess the term is, what is it, skinny fat?
Yep.
And I think it was a little more than skinny fat, but basically, he wasn't. He wasn't fat, but he sure as hell wasn't muscular.
Truth.
But from there, like I said, the next time I saw him was a Super Clash, which he barely did anything in that match. I think he might have done a couple of spots here or there, but for the most part, it was the RPMs that were in the match. And
is he the one that did the job? Like, I think that's all he did in the match. I'm trying to remember.
Well, basically what he did is when they were beating up the RPMs, he was kind of like running to make a save or interfere, and then he'd get like fucking flipped. They'd do a 50-do on him or something, you know. And the Guerrero was actually at this time, I mean, Chavo was already past his prime, and Mondo looked like he was, you know, really, really old. He always had like the white hair, and then Hector was all right. But it was actually a decent match. I mean, the girls looked good, but it was pretty much just a glorified jobber match for the most part.
Yeah.
You know, the next time I saw him, he was in World Class when they were doing that whole Eric Embry against Skandor Akbar deal, which is actually up on my YouTube page at youtube.com/Couture. There's like a 36 clips of that entire feud from beginning to end if anybody wants to check it out. Mm-hmm. A bunch of good Cactus Jack stuff in there. And Cactus won the world like heavyweight title. I think he was I did say he was the heaviest man to ever win that belt, but I actually think Eric Embry weighed more than him, so.
Eric Embry was kind of fat.
I remember they had the world class light heavyweight title, and they said to get more challengers, they're up in the weight limit. So then all of a sudden, Eric Embry is defending against a Botswana beast. At 350 pounds. Like, so stupid.
Yeah, that is pretty ridiculous. I only saw, pieces here and there. By this point, I was in, like, high school. I was, like, either senior, junior, or even out of high school or whatever. So, I mean, wrestling wasn't, like, the main thing on my mind at the time. So I just occasionally saw stuff, like, at that period. I did see, like, the big finale. And I gotta say, the finale made me sick to my stomach, dude. And the reason why is just that it was, I just didn't like seeing them rip apart the banner. I mean,
yeah, that was they kind of made them the heels in the end. So
yeah, I didn't like the lightning because that banner that was real fast. It was always the same banner, and then for them to rip it off, it's like. I just didn't like it. I was done basically with like Texas wrestling at the time after seeing that. I mean, I still watched Global when it came out, but I mean, it's just I never got into the USWA just because I didn't like that. I didn't like it at all. And Eric Embry, he was over, but there's something unlikable about Eric Embry. I just never could really get into him. I mean, I liked him when he first broke in Southwest when he was like the young guy. And a fan favorite, but when he got older and heavier, and his beard and his hair like Ric Flair white anymore, I just never got into him, and so I just never really saw a whole lot of Cactus from that period. I do like
years later when I found out he was the Booker.
Yeah, it's like I was about to say like the story from his book where he's like seeing some girl or whatever. When he's in Texas, and he doesn't really like smarten her up to her, like anything or say anything, but basically it comes down to where he's having a loser leaves town match against Eric Embry, and she's basically upset and crying, and he's like, "What's wrong?" And she's like, "You're wrestling the Booker." So it's like, you know, she knew he was going to lose, and that was pretty much it in Texas.
She saw his car packed up.
Oh, yeah.
He had his car packed up with all his shit in it, going to the next territory at that show, I think.
Yeah. And at this point, wasn't he Cactus Jack Manson?
Yeah, he was Cactus Jack Manson, because he did look like Charlie Manson back then. I mean, he looked like him.
Yeah, before he got fat, he really did look like him, especially when Charlie was young. I mean, it really was almost like he could be a long lost cousin or something. But so I didn't see like a whole lot of Bat Run, and then he moved up to WCW, and for some reason he basically had two runs in WCW. But for some reason, I really don't remember much of the first one. I remember him teaming a little bit with Norman, but I don't remember everything. It's like, I don't know why I blocked that part out.
He was he was doing the gimmick every week where he would turn on. He was on the side of like the squash matches, you know, like he was just teamed with random guys each week and get beat, and then he'd attack his partner and put the elbow on him. And the kind of, it was a little gimmick they were doing there where he would just, every week he'd turn on his tag team partner. And then he started teaming with Kevin Sullivan as the Sullivan Slaughterhouse, I think they called it. And
I don't even remember that.
Sullivan was like kind of like a, he was kind of like his mentor or something at that time. And Cactus Jack could just, like, he'd come to ringside during Kevin's matches and start reading a book. And the book was titled, "I'm in Urgent Need of Advice." And he's just sitting there reading it at ringside. So, and he feuded with Norman, which is, I like Norman, so, do good stuff.
Yeah, Norman the Lunatic was awesome. Chuck and Norm was awesome, but then he got fatter and became Booger Bastion, and I just couldn't get into the Booger Bastion character. But as far as Norman the Lunatic, he was awesome. I mean, he was a really great character. I mean, WCW had some awesome little characters that were starting to get over, but they just kind of, for whatever reason, didn't, like Norman the Lunatic, Beetlejuice, a few other people. But, yeah.
Captain Mike Rotunda. Captain of the ship. And he also brought in Abdullah the Butcher, and he was his he was Norman's partner against Cactus and Kevin Sullivan. I think Bam Bam Bigelow was in there too. He kidnapped Lord Littlebrook and put him in a potato sack one week.
Yeah. I don't understand why they did that, because doesn't Lord Littlebrook and Kiel point to the New Zealand mafia militia, like, you know?
Yeah, the royal family. At the time.
Yeah, the royal family. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Abdullah probably wanted to eat Lord Littlebrook. That's probably why he stole him. But, so what I really remember, of the Cactus Jack is when he came in and, when he wrestled Sting at the Clash of the Champions, was that like his first match back?
I don't think he wrestled Sting. He attacked Sting at the Clash of the Champions.
Oh, yeah, he wrestled him at the Beach Blast. And it was like, what, Beach Blast, right?
Yeah, that was like, he came back in 91 in like August, and Beach Blast was like in 92. He was one that, you know, remember when they were coming out of the gift boxes for Sting? Him,
yeah.
And Abdullah? And it ended up being Lex Luger was the one sending them.
Yeah, I remember that. And but that's like the first real big match where I really noticed him. I mean, really noticed him was that the beach one where him and Sting had that awesome match, and he took the hip toss off the rampway to the concrete, and did the elbow, and then it's funny because at the time it's like, oh my god, those are like oh my god moments, but then you see some of these idiots doing shit that are like 10 times crazier now, and they don't even get the reaction that he got from just doing, like, the elbow to the concrete.
Craig, you can speak now. Sorry.
No, you guys are fine. I'm enjoying the conversation.
When did you first see him, you said?
Like I said, the No Mascaras match was probably the first time I really noticed him.
Mm-hmm.
And, the stuff he did, he did with Vader in WCW, and that was kind of the extent of it until he showed back up in ECW.
Yeah, he was.
Oh, go ahead.
I was gonna say, what was it? I watched the Halloween Havoc Chamber of Horrors last night, coincidentally. that cage match. It had I think it was Vader, it was the Diamond Stud, who was Scott Hall and Cactus and Abdullah against the Steiners, Elegante and Sting, and the thing where the only way to win was to put your opponent and strap him in the electric chair and flip the switch, even though the switch kept falling down to the own position throughout the entire match. That was the best sell job Abdullah ever did in his life.
Yeah. Well, basically, like, it wasn't like your regular, like, cage match. It was kind of like just this weird construction. And there wasn't a chair there at first. Basically, it was just kind of like the cage, and then the chair kind of came down, I guess, when everybody was in there. But what was funny is they had, like, weapons all over the cage, like there's cascade chairs, and there's these coffins. And in the coffins are these, like, jobber wrestlers with masks, and they're supposed to, I guess their job was to jump out and attack the guys, but they never did it. All they did was just get their ass beat down. It was so hilarious.
I was eating last night when I was watching the match, and they had that fucking referee eye camera with cameras on the guy's head. I almost vomited. needed some Dramamine to watch a fucking wrestling match.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure it wasn't as bad as when the Shield wrestled, though.
Now, this is the time when he was in WCW, you got his ear ripped off when he was in Germany with Vader, correct?
Yeah.
And, basically went for the hangman spot and got his head caught in the ropes and then pretty much slipped out and the ear, it didn't come with.
Yeah, the ropes were too tight. He and Samo the Samoan were like the only two guys I ever saw do this move. Get your head caught in the ropes.
Yeah.
It looked like it'd be fairly difficult.
The only other time I can remember is somebody getting their head caught in the ropes was Kurt Hennig. And I think the Road Warriors put him in the ropes to do it and then beat him bloody with a chair. But, yeah, that's consistently he's the only guy I've ever seen, like, miss a flying tackle and actually know how to position your head to get it caught in the ropes. That's crazy. It's a crazy move. I mean, you could really jack yourself up, but no pun intended.
Well, basically, you just got to stick your head in the right place and let your body weight carry the rest of you. Because
right.
You know, the two guys who did it had some big asses. But,
I hadn't noticed that.
Yeah.
This was around the 19th period. Like, I mean, I think it was like the previous year before we went back to WCW, I don't know if you guys read the same stuff, because I was reading in the Aftermath, he was doing all that stuff with Eddie Gilbert and, like, the Tri-State Wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
You remember reading about that kind of stuff?
That was before his WCW, like, right? Or was that after? Or that was in between?
That was, like, right after his first WCW run, like, from 89 to a little bit of 1990. And then, It was in between all that stuff, and because they were doing Tri-State Wrestling at that time. It was kind of like a precursor to ECW. So they were putting on these some of the biggest independent shows, like all over the country, and we're getting like a cult status those shows, like ECW ended up getting, and they had a feud, and I never saw any of the matches because I don't think they had TV. I think you can probably find one of them on YouTube or something like that, and maybe handheld. But yeah, that was one of the big few at the time that I was thinking about.
I think that's why I was so excited when he came back and he wrestled Sting, and showed up, is because I remember him, reading about him, because they always talk about him. They always have pictures of him having his head stuck in the barbed wire match that he had with Eddie Gilbert, where they said he had, didn't they say like 80 something or maybe more punctures just from that one match?
I think they had that one show where didn't they do like a three-match series, so, like, at different points during the show, they did
And I think he jobbed in all three matches was the funny part. It's like, what's the point of having three matches if it's not like, you know, two out of three, and the third one's up for grabs? So basically, he lost all three.
I think maybe it was like a false count anywhere. It was a cage match. I don't know. Maybe one was a stretcher match or a barbed wire. I can't remember what the three matches were, but I distinctly remember.
One of them was a barbed wire. I'm pretty sure one of them was a barbed wire match where they had all the pictures on the After magazine. And he also didn't any break or try and break like a real bottle over his head, and he had trouble doing it. And kind of
Taboo did that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was ridiculous.
Well,
yeah, I actually
him a couple of times. He probably told guys to. He's probably been in matches where there's been beer bottles involved a few times, so probably not the first.
I was going to say, I actually have that Tri-State show on handheld tape, and I remember watching it years ago. It's a horrible copy. It's probably a 5th or 6th generation copy, but it's the last time, you know, when you actually saw people scared of wrestlers, you know, like running away from them. And Cactus invoked that kind of emotion from the crowd at that time.
Yeah, well, he was a scary-looking dude, scary psychopath-looking guy. And I just remember they got a lot of play in the After Mags for that feud with him and Eddie Gilbert. I don't really. It's kind of weird because, like, they at that point, you know, it was mainly they covered WWF, WCW, a few things here and there, and they were really, you know, the territories were dying, so they weren't giving as much attention. But for some reason, Eddie Gilbert and Cactus Jack were all over the After magazine, other magazines. And then when he came back, I mean, he came back as a heel and doing the Bang Bang. Who, if anyone else did that, I think it would look totally stupid. But for some reason, it was cool when he did it. And
Carried Van Hammer to his best match ever in that Falls Count Anywhere match. You remember that?
Yeah. I'm there.
That was the one
Van Hammer.
The Clash of the Champions, and it ended up in like the rodeo barn or something like that. That was like next door to the arena.
Yeah.
Missy Hyatt's outside in a little skirt. It's like 20 degrees outside. So Abdullah Butcher picks her up and puts her in the horse trough. And she didn't know that was going to happen. She was freezing her ass off out there.
And then like Cactus hit like Van Hammer with like the shovel and pinned him.
Yeah, I think with Abdullah, he tried to hit Cactus because Cactus and Abdullah were feuding at the time, and he actually hit Van Hammer.
Oh, that's weird.
I mean, those Falls Count Anywhere matches, he's doing like sunset flips off like the second rope to the outside of the ring. I mean, just stupid shit. And
yep.
And my God.
Well, there's a reason he can't walk straight now, you know, because he did all that crazy shit back then. And that was a great match with Van Hammer. And I mean, like I say, the best spot ever, Missy Hyatt going in the horse trough. That was fucking hilarious. And him and Abdullah did so much awesome stuff. Like you say, the chamber match, you know, Abdullah goes crazy, gets electrocuted, does the greatest cell job ever, like he's being killed, like he's being sentenced to death. And then he's laying there like he's dead. And then I don't know if they were druids or whatever the fuck they were. They tell him that, like, I guess they're going to carry him out or whatever, but he comes back to life. And I just remember his eyes just popped open all crazy, and he just starts killing all these dudes. And then Cactus Jack kind of helps him kill the dudes. And that was just I don't even know what to say about that pay-per-view. I mean, that match is just so out there. It's one of those things. It's so bad, it was awesome.
Speaking of horrors, I also watched Abdullah the Butcher, Bill Kazmaier match last night.
Yeah, that couldn't have been good.
You remember Bill Kazmaier?
Yeah, I just remember him, like, bending pipes and stuff, but he sucked. Him and Rick were teaming for a while.
Yeah, they did that because you remember Scott was out with the arm injury, and I think they seemed like in the World Tag Team Title Tournament and lost to, like, Arn Anderson and Larry Zbyszko.
They had a few matches of Zbyszko and Anderson. What were they called, the Enforcers?
Yeah.
Yeah. But like one of my favorite thing, and I talked about it before, is a Super Brawl. What is not Super Brawl? The fucking Battle Bowl. The Battle Bowl, yeah. And like they're drawing names, and like you got one team of Ricky Steamboat and Todd Champion, and then they pick Cactus Jack, and then they're getting ready to pick the other one, and Abdullah wants to be his partner, but they for some reason. Sergeant Buddy Lee Parker is there, and they call Buddy Lee Parker's name, and Buddy Lee Parker gets all excited because he's going to be on, like, pay-per-view for the first time or whatever, and then Abdullah the Butcher just beats the living shit out of Buddy Lee Parker, smashes him against lockers, smashes his head between the lockers, beats him with a kendo stick. I mean, he just beats the living shit out of him. So Cactus goes to the ring by himself. Oh, no, Abdullah wanted to go to the ring with Cactus, but they stopped him and, like, made him go back. So Cactus is out there wrestling by himself, and then all of a sudden, you just see Sergeant Buddy Lee Parker just crawl through the curtain, and the match keeps going, and you just see him, he's struggling, he's going step by, you know, not even step by step, because he's crawling, but he's going, you know, foot by foot, just with all his effort, and you could tell he just fucked up, and he's giving everything he has just to crawl back to the ring, and finally, after about 5 minutes, he gets to the ring, He's the ropes are holding him up. Cactus tags him, throws him in, and then he gets a high body press from Ricky Steamboat and gets pinned. And it was just like, I don't know who came up with that, but that was just brilliant. It was the greatest thing that ever came out of the Battle Bowl. Excuse me. Were you guys?
I remember
the Battle Bowl?
His feud with the. Remember he took that power bomb on the floor from Vader. During that match they had on that Saturday Night Show.
Yeah. That was like one of the best Saturday Night TV matches ever.
Yeah. He's really getting a shit beat out of him. I mean,
there were two TV matches too, weren't there?
Right? Yeah, there was one the week before, or like 2 weeks before, where I think he broke Cactus's nose or something.
Yeah, that's right.
I love the way they played that whole right after the powerbomb thing, or put him in the ambulance, and this is such a dire thing that Jesse Ventura rides to the hospital in the ambulance with him. I thought that was a great touch, you know, a little realism there, even though Cactus is a baby face or whatever, and you know, Ventura's the heel commentator. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, and those matches were so awesome. I mean, both those matches were awesome. You had that awesome angle with the ambulance, and then they have the big blow-off at the pay-per-view, and it was nowhere near close as good as the first two matches.
Although the pay-per-view was a very good match.
It wasn't as good as the other two, though. The TV matches were awesome. The pay-per-view, to me, didn't live up to the other one.
I thought the pay-per-view match was very good. It was a Texas death match, and it was at Halloween Havoc. And they're fighting up on the stage, and they got all these tombstones set up and with names of the wrestlers on them, and one of them says Vader. And Vader's juice, he's bleeding all over the place. And he gets knocked under the stage right where the tombstone's at. And so his head's all bloody, and he's coming up from, it looks like he's coming up from his own grave, crawling out of his own grave. Like one of the greatest things I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, that was awesome. That part was awesome.
And then he got lost in Cleveland. Remember?
Yeah, he got lost, and then they hired some little reporter chick to be like out looking for him. And first she like talked to like a bunch of homeless persons, and then they finally found him. And what the fuck was his name? I can't even remember. Wasn't he like a captain or something? Or what the fuck?
I don't know. He was living with the homeless in Cleveland.
Yeah,
his girlfriend was named Mrs. Bang Bang or something. I'm not sure. I remember they pulled the Randy Orton thing. They gave him a fake wife as the only play his wife, and his wife was actually pretty smoking hot back then. And so he had to get this dumpy looking woman, this homely looking woman to be his wife for when they go by his house or something. So
didn't they have like Dustin Rhodes like help the reporter go try and find him and talk to him?
Yeah, I think that they found him just to see if they remember Dustin or something like that. And then it was dropped because it was totally fucking stupid, and and they're at this mental hospital, and there's a guy running around acting like fucking Rain Man, There's another one acting like Jack Nicholson, and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And this was the time when they were doing like the blowing up the fucking boats with and going to the White Castle affair to get like, I don't know, 6 hamburgers or something. I don't know what they were doing back then. So.
Well, neither.
They had that little Cheatham or whatever the fuck his name on the contract and had to get him on TV.
Cheatham, yeah. Yeah, he was the midget that he went all covert and got a little fin to make it look like he was a shark so he'd get to their boat and plant the dynamite. Just totally fucking stupid.
That was awesome. That was a great period of pro wrestling.
There was also time at those worldwide tapings. It seems that you would tape like 9 years worth of worldwide in one night, so you know like all the storylines for the next fucking decade.
Mm-hmm.
And all the winners and losers. 5 guys coming out with the same title belt every show for doing all these different shows. Yeah. God, it's what a horrible company.
Yeah.
The strap
might be a little later. I need to get something to drink. I got to drink something. Keep talking.
Okay. Do you remember the strap match you get with Vader, Craig?
Yeah.
No, that was Sting and Vader. I'm sorry, I got 2 guys confused. It was Sting and Vader in the strap match.
Okay.
So, yeah, I screwed that one up. Anyway, he had a Falls Count Anywhere match. I think at Super Brawl in '93 with Paul Orndorff. That was just like an awesome match. And I remember he had the matches with the Nasty Boys, him and Max Payne.
Yeah, those were good.
And I mean, he took a flat back bump. From this, he just, like one of the Nasty Boys, he was just standing on that ramp that was leading to the ring and just pushed him and he went, did just one of those flat back bumps to the concrete. I mean, there wasn't no mats or nothing down there. It just.
I guess you could blame Bill Watts on part of Mick Foley being as fucked up as he is because. You know, when he took the mats away and then he did all those stupid fucking
elbow bumps.
Well,
this was after Bill White had gone and they brought the mats back. This was just like, in next to the ramp and stuff like that big ramp they had in WCW back then for the pay-per-views and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. But, he used to do some crazy shit. I also really liked, one of my favorite things was when he was, was it him and Max Payne against like the Nasty Boys?
Yeah. There was one match against the Nasty Boys, and there was another one with him and Kevin Sullivan against the Nasty Boys.
Yeah. This is the one where they use, like, the hockey sticks.
Yeah, they had Dave Schultz as a referee. He was, like, some kind of enforcer with whatever. I don't know about hockey teams. There's one in Philadelphia with the Flyers or something like that.
Flyers.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But those were some badass matches. I mean, they just beat the shit out of each other, and it's almost natural to say that the Nasty Boys were actually in good matches, but those matches were good.
I don't know whatever became of. I know Max Payne. He was Man Mountain Rock in WWE. Is that correct?
Yeah, and
he
played the national anthem at WrestleMania.
Back stage and dropped it and broke it.
Oops. Yeah, I always liked his work, and he fit really good with Mick. And, I guess you found out who the Marty Jannetty of that team was. So.
Well, Max Payne was good in WCW.
Yeah.
But by the time he got to WWE, he just didn't care anymore or whatever. And then the last we heard of him was when he was going to release that behind-the-scenes video where he's got Luis Pasoli filled out of his mind, just wandering around the hotel in his underwear and all lost. And then you got X-Pac and Kevin Nash and Scott Hall making some kind of a drug deal for pills. And, I mean, there was some awesome shit on that video, but it never saw the day of light.
Or the light of day.
Yeah, Max Payne was good. He was one of those. He went to the New Japan Dojo. He was in there with, like, Chris Benoit or somebody like that. If I remember correctly.
And then after that, then he started teaming. He was he was teaming with what the fuck? He was teaming with Cactus, and then some shit happened with what was his name? Evaz.
Yeah, Dave Sullivan.
Yeah. Who came from your neck of the woods, right? He was a Portland regular as the Equalizer, right?
Yeah, it was the Equalizer.
Yeah.
I'll take your word for it.
Craig doesn't remember?
No. I don't ever remember seeing him up here.
Yeah, and it was, he was supposed to be Kevin Sullivan's dyslexic brother. And so, he got his knee hurt, so they were supposed to go against the Nasty Boys, so instead, Cactus Jack, you know, took his place in that match we were talking about in Philadelphia at Slamboree 94, and they won the tag team titles. And then I think a few days later, Cactus was on ECW TV spitting on the championship belt during the promo.
Yeah, and he doesn't understand why they didn't understand what he did it or his reasoning for it. It's like, yeah, I know you're trying to get the mentor, but you're still sitting on their belt, damn
it. he did have a point. They actually watched him do it, and during the context of the promo he was doing, it kind of wasn't as bad as they made it out to be. So
yeah, but still, I mean, good. If they don't know everything and they just hear about it or just see him spit and throw it down, I mean, it's very easily understandable that they wouldn't be happy about it.
And he got out while Kim was good in WCW because Hogan was coming in, bringing all those hats off Duggins and Honky Tonk Mans with him, and the Brutus Beefcakes and Butchers and I don't know, whatever other bullshit that they had during like one of the worst periods of wrestling television I've ever watched. God, that's horrible. And went to ECW and was working with Sabu and the Sandman. And that was just like a match made in heaven right there. Him and ECW.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't remember the exact first time I saw him on ECW television, but I want to say it's about the time he had the run with Mikey. And they ended up winning the tag titles. And didn't start actually watching ECW TV till kind of late in the game. Late in the game for Foley, because he ended up leaving soon after that. He was, you know, trying to be he had a gimmick where he was trying to be a good technical wrestler, and he wouldn't, you know, hit anybody with a chair. He wouldn't, you know.
He was the anti-hardcore guy.
Anti-hardcore.
I remember in his book he talked about he saw a sign out there that said Kane Dewey, who's his son.
His son.
And it like pissed him off like for real. And when you think back, it's like not so much the matches back then that stick out, but those promos he was doing like the best, like at the time in the business.
Kane Dewey promo still to this day, the Kane Dewey promo is one of the greatest promos ever. I used to be able to recite it line for line.
Yeah.
And then the next one he cut, and it was an ingenious way for him to go heel. I mean. For him to go heel, he had to do something extremely crazy or like to really piss everyone off, and he was able to find that, and you know, it actually worked and it made sense. It's like, you know, the best heels are the heels that think that they're right, and you know, he thought he was right.
Yeah.
And he just, you know, it
was
so awesome.
Well, you bet that audience, they were a bunch of assholes.
Yeah. And I like in the book how he says that the guy who wrote the sign actually felt bad for years and like blamed himself for Foley's filter. And but yeah, those fans were assholes. I mean, ECW fans are, you know, there's this big aura around them, but basically they're famous because they were assholes. You know.
Yeah. One of the famous things I remember, they doing the thing, he was fighting the Sandman, and Sandman used to wear those fucking look like Zubaz pants that look like the American flag or something, and had all the stars and stuff on it, and he threw him in a dumpster in one of their matches. And so then he drags him out of the dumpster, but he's got this big sheet over his head, or he's got a bunch of stuff, so you can see his pants, or the Sandman pants, but you can't see his face. So he brings him out to give him more punishment, and then he takes the sheet off, and it's Terry Funk. It was like one of the greatest things I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome. That was pretty awesome. And they had some good matches. And then, like, have you ever seen, it's on one of the Foley DVDs, but the match of the Sandman, where they would go to some store and they would buy like the plunder that they would use in the matches, and they would buy these frying pans that really didn't hurt. But this time Cactus got like a real cast iron skillet, and he smashes fucking Sandman on the head with it and gives him a concussion. And Sandman's just so out of it that he refuses to be pinned. So every time Foley tried to end the match and pin him, fucking Sandman would just kick out. And he just kept kicking out, and this match just kept going on and just sucked so bad. It was like one of the worst matches ever.
I think it was a Texas Death match, and he just kept getting up after getting beat or whatever, after a fall, he just kept getting up and getting up. And
so finally, Texas just had to beat that shit out of him.
Jesus Christ.
It was funny because the fans would bring plunder to the arena, and Cactus, you know, just grabbed a frying pan from, you know, a fan. And, it didn't work out too well for the Sandman on that occasion.
You grab the cast iron when it looked like something your grandmother baked her cornbread in or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it didn't bend like the cookie sheets. I remember the famous brawl with him and Sabu, and, you know, they had brawled over by a garbage can. The garbage can gets knocked over, and Sabu goes and grabs a beer bottle and just swings it with all of his might. And you can audibly hear on the videotape, you know, a clunk, but no shatter of glass. You know what I mean? So he just hit him as hard as he could with this glass bottle, and it didn't break, and it just thunk. And so, of course, you know, Foley's like, all right, try again, and then clunk again, it didn't break. And I think on the third and or fourth time, it finally breaks, and it's just unbelievable. And just, you know, have you ever taken a beer bottle just to, you know, just to kind of see what it would take to actually
like
break one.
They do in the movies where somebody grabs it and they just break it in one try, like on the bar.
Yeah, it never works. It never works.
Well, luckily I'm not stupid enough to have ever tried that, but I did have a friend who did that, and he smashed the bottle over his head, and the bottle fucking cut him, and he's all bleeding. It's like, oh, you stupid ass. I think you'd be stupid. But yeah. But the greatest thing that they ever gave Cactus Jack to use in a match was when he turned on his partner Mickey Whipwreck, and I remember he cut this awesome promo, and he's talking about he would let Mickey ride with him because he didn't have the money or a car. And
it's Mikey.
Mikey. I always say Mikey. So he says that they're driving, listening to music, and he says that Mikey asked him, "Who is Leonard Cohen?" And they just, you know, he cuts this awesome, funny-ass promo. It's like this, he's cutting this funny-ass promo, but he's doing it all serious, so it's just an awesome promo. And then they have the match, and I think it's his farewell match from ECW. And him and Mikey are having this awesome match, and they're outside, and somebody hands Cactus Jack a Leonard Cohen album. So he grabs the Leonard, Mikey grabs the Leonard Cohen album and started hitting him with it or something. But I just thought that was awesome, that fucking... And, you know, after saying that in one time in a promo, and the next thing, there's Leonard Cohen albums in the audience.
I remember he was doing the thing where he was trying to talk Mikey into coming to WWF with him so they could beat the Smoking Guns for the tag titles. Something like that.
Yeah. And I'll never forget, like, for him and Mikey actually won the titles in Public Enemy. I mean, that was badass.
Yeah.
And then they cut that one promo, and Cactus is all serious and screaming and yelling, and Mikey just looks terrified. And then they cut the, you know, Cactus cuts the promo, and they cut to Mikey, and Mikey's I'm going to die. they were awesome. Him and Mikey were awesome as a team and feuding. I mean, that they were just great.
Yeah. When I first saw the Mankind vignettes when he was going to WWF in 96, I said, oh, God, what is this? What have they done to this poor fella? Cause it, just, mm-hmm. it looked like one of the stupid WWF things they always used to do to guys back then.
Yep.
You know, take a...
No, I thought that about a lot of things, but from when I heard his voice, I didn't see the ECW stuff. I just got to read about the ECW stuff. And I remember him, you know, I was a big fan of him from WCW. So when I heard the voice, I started marking out, and I thought it was great as far as the vignettes. And then when they actually showed him, and he's got the brown costume and the mask and the thing for his fingers, and then I'm like, okay, this might not work out after all. But luckily for him, The Undertaker didn't have a problem putting him over and job to him like the first couple matches that they had. And I just remember, like, he, you know, pulled out his own hair. And I'll never forget one time he pulled a booger out of his nose and gave the guy the mandible claw with the booger on his fingers. And it was crazy.
He had that bald spot where he'd been pulling his hair out, you know, on the left side of his head. And
yeah.
And that was some good stuff.
The first match where he lost to The Undertaker, I just remember just sitting there in silence, like, oh my God, The Undertaker actually fucking lost. What the fuck happened?
Yeah.
When he first came in, they made him look absolutely more deranged than, you know, he really is. You know, they would pull out, or he'd have, you know, bald spots in his hair, and they would move his hair to that side and tuck it into his mask, and you could see where the, you know, the hair had actually been shaved, and they made sure to accentuate the ear, and you could see it. And you'd come to the ring, and he'd have, like, I don't even know how to describe it, but it would be kind of an evil sounding music. He would go in, he would quickly dispose of his foe, and then he would sit in the ring and hold himself and shake almost in a fetal position, and there'd be this calming piano music playing after his match. And just the whole presentation from start to finish was really interesting and so different than the other cartoon characters the WWE was putting out at the time.
Yeah, he was off. I think one is, I mean, the match sticks out most to me, like, before the Cell match, was probably that Mind Games match with Shawn Michaels.
Oh, yeah.
That match was awesome.
Yeah, that's a match where... And I think they're full of shit when they say they planned all that. That's Shawn throwing a tantrum and Foley fucking responding with a forearm. I don't care what anyone fucking says about that.
Yeah, it's funny. Like Shawn's on the, like, standing on the middle rope. He's gonna do like a flying axe handle or something, and all of a sudden, just inexplicably, Mick just walks to the other side of the ring, and Shawn says. John's got this look on, like, you motherfucker, because he looks like an idiot standing on one of the corners. This guy's all the way over there, so he just jumps down, kind of doing a tantrum there, and goes over and smacks him.
Yes, they were mimicking the spot they did that Shawn did with Vader in his SummerSlam match.
They weren't mimicking shit. It was a shoot. I know.
Oh, my gosh. You're such a mark. You're such a mark.
Not a mark, it was a shoot. He shoot for him, Shawn Michaels right in the face.
I think I remember reading it in his book that it was to mimic the him and Shawn and Vader from.
That was all political. That's just, you know, trying to stay on the good side of everybody. That's all, you know. That's just like Trish thanking Stephanie McMahon for 5 minutes in her fucking hurt Hall of Fame ceremony.
Yeah.
Okay, on that documentary I was watching last night, they actually show, like, the memo somebody in the creative department sent to, like, Vince with all the suggested names for his character. And I got a list here. Yeah. Okay, first we have Ear Man.
Ear Man? Ear Man?
Yeah.
Ear Man, like ear.
Yeah.
Like ear, like he's missing an ear. He's the Ear Man.
The next one is Grimace. Maybe they want to do sponsorships with McDonald's or something. I don't know. Next
was, he gonna wear a purple outfit and purple face?
Well, he is kind of shaped like. He's kind of shaped like that. I'm just saying.
The next one is Ergon.
Ergon. Oh, jeez.
Hermit Van Gogh.
Oh my God.
Ogre Van Gogh. Muskrat Jack.
Muskrat Jack.
Yeah.
That's
face.
Money right there.
Odd Man. And the last one is Gregor Mental. God, no wonder they did shit stuff back then. God damn.
Yeah, that's and they actually paid people to come up with names like that. That's the sad part.
Yeah. Somebody was earning money that day.
Yeah. But to me, the thing that's
even worse than Stone Cold names. Like Dagger McFreeze or Chili McFreeze or something like that, whatever they were doing. What sounds like, makes his name sound like you're going to go order a slush puppy or an icy or something at the big own convenience store.
They could have gone with Cold Stone. That way he could have got free ice cream for the rest of his life.
Hmm. Have you heard Stone Cold's podcast?
Yes, I listened to the one with Shawn Michaels. I think it was the last week. That's a damn good show.
That's a really
apparently
good show.
Apparently he has grooming tips this week or something.
I haven't checked it out this week. I saw him tweeting back and forth with Shane Helms, but I didn't think much
about it. Didn't he have a shell?
Who?
Chael Sonnen. Wasn't he on the show or something?
Oh, Chael. I'm not sure. Hold on. Do some investigation. Talk amongst yourselves.
To me, like I say, you know, I mean, he got lucky because Undertaker actually put him over a couple times, and then, like, Paul Bearer turned on the Undertaker to go with Mankind. But what really put Mankind over is when he did those, the interview, the multiple-part interview with Jim Ross, where he talks about his whole history and, you know, basically from, you know, going to Madison Square Garden to watch Jimmy Snuka jump off the cage, and then you can actually see him in the video and you know, all that. And to me, that's still, to me, one of the greatest things they ever did on Raw. I mean, those interviews were awesome. I mean, it really made, like, people or even, like, especially me, like, I really could relate to him after watching those characters, those interviews. I mean, they were just so great. It's like, it's to me, that and the Kane Dewey are, like, the greatest things he's ever done.
Yeah, I like those promos the interview that, I think it was Jim Ross doing the interview. And it was really good. And I think, didn't they do the same thing with Goldust? Had a character? Or without the makeup on or something?
Yeah, they did one, and they, you know, they talked about the daughter Dakota and some other stuff. It was good, but it wasn't as good as the McFoley ones. But the McFoley one is like one of the greatest acting jobs ever. I mean, he is so awesome just talking about everything, you know, from, you know, when he's talking about meeting Shawn Michaels for the first time, you know, Shawn Michaels giving him a hard time and just, you know, he starts pointing out all the injuries and it's just so, you know, you talk about getting, you know, the way you get over in wrestling, even if they give you a shitty character or gimmick, is believing in the character and doing your best. And he did that in these interviews. I mean, he made the character come to life
and
you know, humanized the character. And to me, after that, that's what put him over the top. And that's where he became like one of those bona fide fan favorites for life. You know, people will always be a fan of Mick Foley. And to me, it all started with those interviews.
Yeah, plus he was also one of those guys that he's like the ultimate, like the ultimate anomaly in wrestling, is a guy who's never supposed to make it as far as he did, you know? I mean,
yeah.
I can't think of too many other guys like that. that were just, you know, didn't have much of a look and just kind of...
He was like, basically, and this might be a good way to describe him. He was the last of the last guy who looked like a territory guy that was over in the big leagues. Because,
yeah.
like, back in the 70s and early 80s, you had guys that were just normal dudes who were main eventers. And
uh-huh.
there were a bunch of them because, you know, there were so many territories that you, you know, there was plenty of, you know, you could have that variety, but... Basically, when it became WCW, WWF, you had to be a jacked-up guy, and he's like the last guy who would look at like you could fuck him out of the territory and put him in the big league, and he's probably still like the last guy because you don't see guys who aren't, you know, you have to be in shape to be in the WWE, basically, for a long period of time, and,
yeah.
you know, he, like I say, he's like the one guy who had that long career and never did. I mean, he was just, he was lucky, I mean. He just, it was just the one in a million shot, you know?
Yeah, and then everybody and their grandmother who wants to come into wrestling is going to be, does a bunch of stupid shit, you know, like this backyard crap and, you know, taking all these stupid bumps because, well, like, well, hey, Mick Foley did it. Well, that wasn't all it. I mean, it helps him, but, you know, he has a heck of a personality and, he's a good actor if you look at it. You know,
and in all honesty, it wasn't the bumps to the elbow to the concrete. It wasn't the sunset flips to the concrete. It wasn't. That's not what really got him over. It was the interviews. It was all the interviews that got him over.
Yeah.
You know. So then you got all these idiots that oh, I'm going to get hit with about 10 fluorescent lights and get cut up and get mercury in them and all this other crap and. You know, that realizing that it was the promos that got him over. So,
yeah, he was all, he's already like a big deal even before that big cell match with The Undertaker. I mean, he's already like, you know, had this cult status at least all over the place
yeah.
with a big name. That cell match just kind of cemented him as, you know, cemented his legacy in the business, I think, and really made him like unforgettable. It was that one moment that some guys get that everybody really was the Jimmy Snuka Don Morocco. Although it was
well,
far
I just,
more
I
strange.
Just remember watching the pay per view live, and I'm sitting there with a friend, and they're on the top, and the next thing you know, it's like, wait a minute, is he really going to? He is throwing them off the top, and it's like, oh my god! And then I just remember my friend just eyes wide open, mouth open, just turns to me and says, "Is that supposed to happen?" And I'm like,
I was at a friend's house watching that live, and I know you had four people in the living room just standing up for this entire match. Mm-hmm. Didn't know what the fuck was, you know, I mean, I thought, was this an accident? I mean, obviously, you go back and look, he chunked him right off that fucking cage. I mean, it was no accident. Man, Jim
yeah,
Ross, gosh, it was the greatest call of his career because it was real. He was worried about this poor fucker.
Yeah. I just remember, like, they're stretching him away after the first one. They're stretching
mm-hmm.
him away, and then all of a sudden, he's standing, and and he runs back to the cage, and he climbs up after taking this fucking 20-foot, whatever the foot, fall onto a table, almost getting killed. Almost killing himself, crushing his body. Somehow he got up that fucking cage twice as fast as he did the first time.
Yeah, I think he had dislocated shoulder. So
yeah, his shoulder was hurt. He climbed up that cage like nothing, dude. It's like, and Jim Ross is just freaking out. You know, he can't believe it. You know, because they didn't really know what the fuck was going on in the match. He was just calling it, and it's just,
and then when he went through
the
second time, he just said. Somebody stopped the damn match. I mean, he was going with this poor fella to die. And and I said, well, what else can they do? And they bring us the thumbtacks. And I ain't never seen the thumbtacks before. I said, Jesus. This, I don't know what the fuck's going on.
Well, I just remember watching that from the Hall of Fame, you know, Terry Funk's talking about he's watching the match from the back and he sees it go through the second time. And he's like, he sees him, and he's like, he's dead. And he goes, so I went to the ring to confirm that he was dead. So I get, he goes, I get in the ring and I look at him and I'm like, oh God, he's dead. And so I turn to the Undertaker and I tell him, he's dead. And the Undertaker's like, he's getting up, and he chokeslams him out of his tennis shoes. And I'll never forget Foley's book. I just laughed my ass off. He's like, why are there tennis shoes in the ring? But that's one of the, I mean, it's funny because everyone thinks that's one of the greatest matches ever, but in all honesty, they really didn't do a whole lot besides the two big bumps and the thumbtacks and stuff.
They didn't need to.
Yeah. I think back to this has to be like the most famous, like hardcore type match of all time. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. It's the greatest smoke and mirror match of all time.
I mean, I think it's got to be the most famous one. I can't think of any one. I mean, there's been plenty of matches where probably there's been worse stuff done to somebody. I mean, most likely over in Japan or some ECW stuff or maybe something like that. I don't know. But, I think this is the most famous one. Has to be.
Yeah.
Easily.
Yeah. And,
I need to interrupt you. I just got a text from young Vincent Verhey, and he wants to leave a few minutes early. So I need to leave. So.
Well, bye then. Go play with your cool.
Yeah, hi. It's Vince.
I know.
You know, the funny part is you're going to leave now, and then you're going to be waiting there forever for him.
Oh, I know. I'm very well aware of that. But,
and make sure you tell Vinny that we said thanks for fucking up the show, Vinny.
Yeah, I'll do that. And he'll respond with, what are you going to do? You know? So anyway, I apologize. I didn't run.
Did you guys buy like stilts for Junior Horseman so he doesn't look so out of place next to you guys?
Yeah, we'll make sure we put him in front of us.
So you can put him on your shoulders so that way he can see. You know, he's only the size of a small child.
I didn't know you said that. But seriously, I need to run. Have a good rest of the show. Follow me on Proper Jam. If you're listening live, and I'll tweet some stuff from the show. Yeah.
All right, cool.
Anyway, you'll give me a red beer,
but I'll see what I can do.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Craig, we'll see you later. You know, it's not that he has to leave early. He's just mad because I vetoed his show about From Parts Unknown.
Yeah. I can't even remember enough interesting people from Parts Unknown to have a show, to be honest.
Right. The only person I can think of off the top of my head is like the spoiler.
The Missing Link?
And maybe the Missing Link. I mean, that's a show where you would have to go do a bunch of research and make a list. And
Ultimate Warrior.
I just like he picked that last night. He pitched that last night, and I'm like, so what are we doing, youth? And then he's all, you can tell he was all hurt about it. He's all, sure. but anyway. one of my favorite things, one of my favorite runs of Cactus Jack was where he was like, he was still like the heel, and he was slowly becoming like the bumbling fool for Vince McMahon. Like I remember, it was like I think he was teaming with Kane, and him and Kane were like the tag team champions, and they're taking on the new age outlaws. But Kane's not there, and Foley's all scared, and doesn't he can have the match, and Vince is there to like fire him up, and he's like, but Vince, I don't have any weapons, and Vince has like some kind of tray, and he's like, this could be your weapon, and he just fires Mick Foley up. To the point, like he's like fucking, like a football coach or something. And so Foley goes running out and he gets his ass kicked, and then gets his ass kicked by Kane. And then one of my all-time favorite things is when Stone Cold hurt Vince, and they're like getting ready to like wheel Vince out on the stretcher, and like all the Yes Men are there and the doctors. And Mick Foley has his big ass fucking drink, and he's just trying to give Vince a drink.
Yeah, he's offering him a sip from his like from his big gulp from a 7-Eleven or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. That was just so awesome. And fucking McMahon just got that disgusted look on his face.
I was just even bringing that up because that was on that Duck and Bait. They showed that bit on that documentary I watched last night. Oh, that's
yeah.
So awesome. And then he goes into, it's still one of the like the best little skits or whatever when he's in the hospital. I mean,
yeah.
The hospital thing would not have been so great except Stone Cold hit him with the bedpan in the head and it made a big noise. And I was sitting there watching with a couple of guys. We were, I had a few roommates, and we were sitting there watching, and I swear we laughed for like 10 minutes after that. Jesus Christ.
And then the heart monitor in the background.
Yeah.
Like he's about to die. But what the fuck? Uh-oh. Contreras has been, got disconnected from the host number. So I guess I'm talking by myself here for a second. So hopefully Contreras will call back in and we can get going. But yeah, it's funny. Technical difficulties in the beginning, technical difficulties at the end here. But now going back to the skit with like Stone Cold in the hospital, McMahon in the hospital, that's the fastest that a gimmick has ever gotten over because, you know, Foley came to visit McMahon and McMahon gets scared because at first he thinks it's Austin, but it's Foley and he brings a clown and him and the clown are trying to cheer up McMahon. They give him candy and everything. He gives him candy because Foley goes, because everybody knows Vinny's got a sweet tooth and McMahon's just going crazy and then the next thing you know, Foley's got a sock puppet on his hand named Mr. Socko, who's trying to have a conversation with Mr. McMahon. So finally, Vince just loses his shit and throws them all out. And then he just sits there looking with a disgusted look on his face and says, Mr. Socko! And then the next week on Raw, there's Mr. Socko signs and people are wearing Mr. Socko's and the rest is history. And one of the most famous finishers in all of wrestling is a dirty sweat sock with a face on it. And that was just crazy. And then one of my favorite things is the Survivor Series when it looked like they were setting up the Survivor Series. The Rock was a face, but it looked like they were going to try and set it up for Mankind with Vince, and they were trying to set it up for Mankind to win for Vince. And I remember like the first match they introduced like this famous. They were, like, introducing somebody like he was famous and a star and all this. And then they bring out Dwayne Gill, who would later become Gilbert. But at the time, he just jobber Dwayne Gill, jobber for, like, years and years and years. And he beats him. And then, like, the next match is against Al Snow. So they kidnapped Mr. Socko or something, and they wrapped him around head. And so he wanted to beat up Al Snow because he was in possession of Mr. Socko. And then it came down to Foley and The Rock like you think it would. And then, of course, they turned on Foley. And The Rock wins the title. And that kind of, like, starts one of Foley's face turns. And then that leads to the Royal Rumble match, which is one of the most brutal, craziest matches of all time. And if you've ever seen Beyond the Mat, it's even more intense if you see it that way, because when you watch the Royal Rumble and you see it's this awesome, crazy match, you're not seeing his family in the background, and they'll be on the mat. His family's right there, and they basically cut to them with every chair shot, and every chair shot you hear the wife scream and the daughter scream, and Dewey's just like, got this, like, look like, oh my God, what's going on? And they're all crying, and finally they can't take no more, and they leave, and Foley just, it's so many chair shots to the head that is just brutal. And he took more than he was supposed to. He got mad, so his response was to keep coming at The Rock even faster and harder. So that's why he took like three more in a row. and he has this big-ass cut that they stitch up on Beyond the Mat, and he's telling the kid that he's okay, and he's telling the little daughter, it's just a boo-boo, it's just a boo-boo, and then the daughter responds, it's a big boo-boo.
Ed, are you there?
So yeah, I'm here. You back?
I'm sorry about that. I don't know. Some reason I got knocked off, and then it wouldn't let me in the call, and so I had to shut my phone down and then open it back up and all that crap. So sorry about that.
It's like I said, it's all Craig's fault. As soon as he got off the air, shit started happening. It's all Craig's fault. But I'm talking about the Royal Rumble match with The Rock, and you know, talking about Beyond the Mat with the kids looking and how they're sewing them up. And people disagree with me, but to me, that was a self-inflicted cut that he did before the match. Because if you look at, like, Beyond the Mat, the doctor and him, they keep messing with the side of his head. They keep, like, kind of messing with it. So I think that cut was already there, and it was just planned for, like, the chair shot to hit it and first to bust open. I don't think it was supposed to bleed like it did. But, I mean, I think that vagina that he had on the side of his head was already there. Go back and watch Beyond the Mat, and right before, like when they're backstage, watch. They're constantly poking or messing with that side of his head.
That's one of those matches you feel bad that you like popped for years later.
Yeah. Well, you feel bad when you watch Beyond the Mat. That's when you feel bad when you see the family just screaming and yelling and crying and having to leave. And
yeah,
that was like, of course, but that makes Beyond the Mat so awesome. I mean, Beyond the Mat is one of the greatest things ever wrestling related. I mean, the shit that they just caught, you know what I mean? They just got some great shit on there. And, yeah, I mean, it's just awesome. And, he wonders why he can't remember things or has trouble walking. I mean, he really only has himself to blame for that. You know what I mean? I mean, and I'm not saying that in a bad way, but, you know, that is the reason why he's as banged up as he is, because he did do such crazy, crazy stuff. And,
I don't think he has to have his wife has to put his socks on, for Christ's sake. I mean, he's...
Yeah. But, you know,
he had that comic personality, that comedic personality that he could get away from the hardcore stuff and that's something to fall back on, you know?
Yeah. Which he did do. Kind of like how
Joseph Park, how he's been able to fall back on the Joseph Park character after doing Abyss all that time and still be like, relevant. So.
Yeah, So now he just has to take, like, maybe one or two bumps instead of doing all the bumps into the thumbtacks and everything else that he used to have to fucking do. So, you know, that's actually pretty cool. But one of my favorite things that he did was the one Royal Rumble where he starts the match. It's him and Terry Funk starts the match. He comes out as Cactus Jack. And then later on he comes out as Dude Love. And then later on he comes back out as Mankind. I mean, that was fucking awesome.
Now, you were there for the debut of Dude Love, right? Live?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I was. I just remember, like, they kept showing, like, these big boots that were walking across the screen. And I remember, like, Shawn Michaels made a surprise appearance. The Patriot made his first appearance. And it ended up being Dude Love teaming with Stone Cold to beat Owen and the Bulldog. And, yeah, that was actually pretty cool. And, yeah.
When I first saw it, I thought that was a fucking piss. Those guys are so stupid. And, that was good stuff.
I remember the fucking climax, though, with Dude Love, where he's like, who was he even? I don't even remember who he was wrestling, but it was like a cage match. And he's on top of the cage. He's going to do the Jimmy Snuka dive off the top of the cage. And he rears back to rip off his shirt. Because he's going to reveal his Dude Love tattoo that he talked about in the interview.
Yeah.
And he rips off his shirt, and you can barely see it because all the sweat is fucking like... got rid of most of it. It's like, oh, fuck, dude, that was fucking funny.
I remember that first time we saw Cactus Jack in WWF at Madison Square Garden where Vince got stunned the first time, I believe.
Yeah.
And he had that that false count anywhere match with Triple H. And then it was like, I think one of his best matches ever was like, it was, I guess maybe 3 years later. We came back as Cactus Jack and they had the street fight, him and Triple H at Madison Square Garden at the Royal Rumble.
That yeah, that was bad. That was badass, and then they had the Hell in the Cell match that was Jimmy rigged and just didn't look as good.
Yeah, I like when they do stuff where it looks like the ring falls in, just like
yeah.
I mean, like if you go all the way through the ring, like when fucking Bam Bam and Taz went through it. You remember when that happened?
Yeah.
And you know you got these two guys in this big hole. But just when you can see it's just like it's so rigged to sink in like it was, it just kind of takes it away. And my God, were people mad when he came back like 3 weeks later. Jesus Christ, I've never seen some people were pissed off because he's supposed to be retired. At this point, I know about these wrestling retirements. I'm not offended by it. You know,
yeah.
It ain't that big of a fucking deal to me. So, somebody retires in this bullshit except Jack Briscoe.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, you know, and then after there, I mean, he still, you know, he had the awesome match with Edge at WrestleMania with Fire.
Randy Orton
and
Backlash in 2004. That was one of his best matches,
yeah.
Too. Both those matches. I mean,
yeah, both of them. And then, like, who can ever forget the Rock This Is Your Life, who, you know, everyone says it was a train wreck and horrible, but it's still one of, like, the highest downloaded things ever. And that
and
was awesome.
I have the greatest line, and he brings his old girlfriend. The Rock's talking about his old girlfriend, cut him off at second base, and then now all these years later, she wants to come back and give him a piece of that poontang pie. And Jerry Lawler just did like, he just like loses it.
Yeah, that was fucking
like the funniest thing I've ever heard. I mean, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that was pretty crazy. And, yeah, I was about to bring up something and I forgot. And I hope everyone can't hear me taking a piss in the background. But, goddamn, what the fuck did I want to bring up? There was something I wanted to bring up that was one of the best matches ever was the fucking halftime show.
Oh, the MC Arena match.
Yeah, the MC Arena with The Rock, where he used the fucking forklift to pin The Rock.
Yeah, that was halftime heat. It was like Sunday Night Heat during the halftime of the Super Bowl. And they had the MC Arena match, and I don't know, shit like that's fun. I mean, it's just, you can just hear everything, and I think Vince was doing a commentary solo by himself, and
Didn't like The Rock grab the microphone and start doing commentary too, while he was bidding up Texas Jack.
Yeah, he put the forklift on him, and then, well, he ain't kicking out of that one, so.
Yeah, that was fucking great. And
that
was
the first time he won the title, you know. Just somebody that wasn't ever supposed to win it, even to get to that point, you know. And I thank Tony Schiavone for telling me to flip the channel. Appreciate it.
I know, right? What the fuck was that, dude? I mean, that's so funny. I thought they could say that to like keep people from changing the channel, and he says that, and everyone changed the channel.
It wasn't like Tony Giovanni's one that did it. He was told to do it. So, I mean, it was not his fault. Although the butt in the seats line might have been his. Might have been an ad lib. I don't know. That'll put butt in the seats. That's like one of the most famous, I think it was the same night as the Finger Poke of Doom, wasn't it?
Honestly, I don't remember, dude.
I think so. Yeah, I think it was the same night as the Finger Poker Doom. And, that was another brilliant thing.
Yeah. But we've actually gone past our usual time. We're on, like I guess you said, for 2 hours. So let me drop the plugs real quick. Everyone check out angrymarks.com. You can always download the stream or show at angrymarks.com, along with a lot of other shows, like the Angry Mark Show and a lot of other shows. I'll probably be getting an angry PM or email from Stevie saying, why didn't I tell him that the show was moved to 6 o'clock? And it's Craig's fault. It's Craig's fault, Stevie. Send all your angry emails to Craig. It's his fault.
And we may not even be on the air for all we know.
Yeah. Nah, I'm sure we're recording. But, so it's Craig's fault that I forgot to remind you that the show was at 6. So, yeah.
You know, if I'd have known earlier, before I had plans for the weekend, I would have probably been in San Antonio this weekend.
Oh, really? For what, Fiesta?
Yeah, because my mom and my uncle and my aunt were going there because I got another aunt that she's like on the board of the International Reading Association, and they're having some kind of big banquet there this weekend or something.
Uh-huh.
And she's being honored and stuff like that, and they were going to see her. And so.
Yeah, we should have came. We could have been doing the show live and smoking weed at the same time.
Yeah, I know. I didn't find out till like middle of the week, and I already made some plans for later this weekend. So I told my mom to make sure they give me, because also guest speaker is LeVar Burton from Star Trek: The Next Generation. I want his autograph.
I'll get the fuck out of here. That's cool. Yeah, there's all kinds of shit going on because Fiesta's starting. So there's the Fiesta Oyster Bake, which is a big event at the St. Mary's University. And then they got all kinds of stuff. Nyosa will be starting soon. There's there's all kinds of shit. This one friend of mine from Facebook is posting that she's going to see some you know how like they get all these old headliners together and have all these different people like on one like concert show. It's
mm-hmm.
They're having like Tiffany and Lisa and all those chicks from the 80s are playing here in town tonight. So
is Code Jam with Lisa?
Yeah, Code Jam with Lisa. And Exposé. It's okay. I'm reading it right now. Ladies Legends Tour with Tiffany, Exposé, and Lisa.
God,
that's
one of those
names.
This is one of those group names you just remembered: Lisa and Cult Jam from back in the
80s. Yeah, and I guarantee you, there's a bunch of hot MILF and cougars at this show. I kind of wish I would have gone to it now. But with that said, there's probably
big
a bunch of
match this weekend in San Antonio too, huh?
The what?
Big boxing match. This weekend, San
Antonio? Oh, yeah. I just read that they're doing the Spurs configuration for the Alamo Dome, which is like a little less than half the dome.
Mm-hmm.
And when the Spurs played there, they didn't always open the upper deck. So usually like the average was like about 18 or 19. But when it was a big game, they'd open up the upper deck. And when they opened that up, they could put 38,000 people. And apparently they sold all 38,000 tickets for this fight tomorrow, which I'm not going to. I don't really into boxing, but it's a big success. I mean, that's a lot of people to go to a boxing match. And
the only time I was ever into boxing was when Mike Tyson was fighting, because it'd be over very quick. So
yeah,
I'm not sitting there watching two guys just try to hit each other for like 12 rounds. That just bores me.
Yeah, I don't really care for boxing at all. But
I just watch the Rocky movies. That's all boxing I need to watch. So.
Right, that's true, because you just get that, you get the highlights during the rounds. You don't get the whole round. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you want to watch boxing, watch Rocky and not real boxing.
Yeah, they got the better fights, and they got better music, too.
Yeah, that's some awesome movies. I guess we could start to go ahead and wrap up unless there's any more things you wanted to make sure we talked about.
I really can't think of anything. Isn't he the GM of Saturday Morning Slam now?
Yeah, now he is, but I've never actually even seen Saturday Morning Slam.
I know, it's just It's one of those things. Saturday morning slam as a commissioner. It's weird, man. But everybody should go check out that that documentary. You're gonna need to buy the DVD, or it was on Xbox Live, and I was able to stream it and watch it. So it's good stuff. It's not so much anything new, but it's like most of the old same old stories. But you get to go through his entire career, so it's some fun stuff.
Ridiculous Saturday Morning Slam a couple years ago in Vegas at one of the conventions. It was late at night, we're all drunk, and at the end of the bar, there's this this girl with this, like, bright red hair, and, like, real big hair, and she's real pretty hot. And I remember making some comments to the Barb about her, like, thinking she was pretty good-looking. And Barb's like, well, go talk to her. And I'm like, oh, she's not going to talk to me. So Barb basically pulls me off my stool and just, with all her might, pushes me towards this girl. So I go over there, and I start talking to this girl, and she's like 21 years old. She's from like Riverdale, California somewhere. She's kind of from the hood. So we start talking that night, and then we kind of got it off. We got along real good, and then like the next day, even though I was leaving, she wanted to meet up with me again, so I met up with her. And I've been in contact with her. But that night that we were talking, I explained to her, like, what I was doing there. She kind of just thought it was kind of funny. And she always rips on me watching wrestling and liking wrestling. She's always got something to say. But one morning she watched Saturday Morning Slam, and she was texting me about, like, what she was seeing and how stupid it was, and just making fun of me. But now it seems like she watches it every fucking Saturday. And she still makes fun of me, like, trying to make fun of me, but it's like she's still watching it every Saturday. Like, she can't admit that she actually likes it, but she keeps watching it. But I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
But other than that, I kind of got some errors I got to run, so we'll go ahead and wrap up the show here. So I guess
and
we should be back.
We're on the air to have some sort of a show, so I apologize.
Well,
or whatever its problem was.
Yeah, it wasn't. I mean, it wasn't just me or Contreras. It was both of us couldn't get on. I mean, I couldn't get on the switch. I'm on it now, but it took over an hour for it to finally load for me. And
yeah.
But like I said,
I got an email about some kind of security issues that Blog Talk was having the last week or so, or something like that. So.
Did you notice
they
changed
the email? They said in the email my show would not be affected. So they've already lied to me.
Yeah. Did you notice they changed our host call-in number a few weeks ago?
Yeah, that's why I kept trying to call in this, because I had it saved on my phone from like a while back, when I would have to call in sometimes, and I had it just in case I needed it or you couldn't call in or something, and I kept trying, and I saw they had a new number up there, so I tried that.
I just remember because it used to be when I would call in, because I'd always call in a few minutes before the show starts. I'd call in, I typed in the area code, and you know how like your phone starts to recognize numbers, right?
Mm-hmm.
So after a bunch of times, for some reason I'd always forget this, so I'd put in the area code and then I'd just hit send or like call, you know, basically thinking it's gonna know what number I'm calling, but the area code was the first three numbers of Barbara's phone number. So I'd be calling, and I'm getting ready to hear the recording, and I'd hear Barb like, what do you want? And I'd be like, oh, shit. So I'd have to hang up on her and call back in the real number. And I don't know. I did it like fucking a dozen times. I don't know why I kept forgetting that it would, if I just typed in the area code, that it would put her number instead of the real one. But it's like every time I'd call, like a Friday, about right before 8 o'clock, she's like, by the end, she's like, you're calling the wrong number. I was like, oh, shit. But, yeah, so now it's changed, so now it doesn't do that to me. But we'll go ahead and, like I say, we'll be back next week, hopefully at our regular time. Hopefully we can start working on getting some guests. I got a couple leads on a few people. Hopefully Craig will stop being lazy and start trying to get a guest, too, instead of worrying about going to see Prince. I mean, seriously, who wants to see Prince, dude? That's getting worse than Pro Jam. And I hope he only says new shit and doesn't say any of his hits. That would be so awesome.
I hope he plays that shitty song from Batman.
Yeah. Did you, that was an awesome song. Did you ever listen to last week's show back, by the way?
I think I did. Sometimes I go back and I listened to a little bit of it. Why?
You notice how pissy Craig was the whole show? It's like he doesn't go to WrestleMania, but then he regrets it and he's mad that I didn't get to talk to him. It's like, why are you being such a hater, man? You're a man of God. You should be happy.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you could hear him being all grumpy last week. But anyway, like I say, we'll be back next week, hopefully a regular time, and hopefully we won't have any more problems here. And so I guess we'll just talk to everybody next week.